Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hello and welcome to a special and unplanned episode of Hello Pine Knob, and one that, to be honest, we wish we didn't have to do. I'm your host, Gary Graff. The world was shocked on September 1st as word spread about the passing of Jimmy Buffett at the age of 76, but it hit particularly hard around here. The Detroit area was a fixture on his touring itinerary since back in the mid and late 60s, really, when Buffett, as a folk singer, would play at the Raven Gallery in Southfield. He played lots of spots in Detroit over the years, including the Palace of Auburn Hills, Comerica Park, and Detroit's Riverfront Park. But Buffett and his Coral Reefer Band were most at home at Pine Knob, where the group played 34 times between 1982 and 2021, bringing the Parrothead magic to the lawn and pavilion alike, with boat drinks and cheeseburgers in paradise for all. It was on a cold and rainy afternoon before his September 23rd show in 2021 that we sat down with Buffett one last time to discuss Pine Knob's then upcoming 50th anniversary. He was dressed for the weather, though space heaters for the stage would allow him to go barefoot, as was his habit, during the show that night. During our conversation, Buffett spoke about his fondness for Pine Knob and the Detroit area in general, as well as about his career and how the Parrothead idea took flight all those years ago.
What I like about this place is I like the crowd that comes to this place. You know better than anybody that performers, when they're coming through, they know certain areas that are really good fans of live music. This place always had a great following like that, and the people that came out of here were always aware of that, so they always drew like Bob and like Fry and like people like that that came out, and then the Motown group. But it was like there were always a great crowd here. And for us, it came in, and we weren't from here, and the way people kind of gravitated towards us initially, a couple of beach bumps coming up from Florida. But then all of a sudden I realized, because the interesting thing is, I realized then that the way people migrate, way snowbirds migrate, East Coast goes to the East Coast of Florida, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Illinois goes to the west coast of Florida. And growing up on the Gulf, it was pretty interesting because a lot of people I knew down there that would come down would be from here or there. But it was interesting that they had some kind of a little feel for what we were doing musically, other than the fact that they kind of wanted to go to the beach anyway. So I kind of picked up on that initially, but they were always such a great listening crowd. And like you said, it rained that first day. The show I remember is when it poured down rain 2 days before, and then we sold out. I mean, who gets to do that? I don't know, but I mean, I am very appreciative of that kind of loyalty. And I'm just glad this place has been here for 50 years. That's pretty amazing. It always feels the same, whereas others have, they've kind of looked, basically trying to put more seats in. That's what everybody else is doing. I understand that, but it always made me come back here. I mean, all the ones I went out there and tried elsewhere did not ever come to the comfort level I feel of me on stage here, or the comfort level of the audience feels, and the interaction, because they are so close. And I think that they feel they're in something pretty special, and I do too here.
Buffett explained to us that his feelings about Pine Knob reflected his feelings about the Detroit area in general after prior years of playing here.
Well, I was playing clubs then. I played the Ravens Gallery in Southfield, because he was on the circuit then, and my brother-in-law now, who was not my brother-in-law then, Thomas McGuane, grew up in Southfield, and I stayed like with his father and his sister because it didn't cost any money to come play. And then I got extended, and I think again it was like I didn't know how we would do when we started venturing out, but I was by myself then doing it, but people were very appreciative and very friendly to me for doing it, and I never forgot that. Back in those days when the Nederlanders had this place, they were the first ones that also gave me a break and let me, I didn't come here and open. I don't think I opened for any acts here. I came and headlined the first time. That was the Jimmy Sr. and Jimmy Jr. just had that much of a belief in me to do it. The great thing is I'm still working with those guys on our plays, But 30 years later, we're still friends and partners and things.
Buffett said he was well aware of Pine Knob and what was going on there before he was big enough to headline it himself.
I knew about it because it was like when there were just a handful of sheds, as they were called back then. So as I was coming up, because, you know, the way it was all kind of structured then, that local promoters had clubs. They had them here when I think the Niederlanders ran them with Jack Boyle, had Cellar Door by Bill Graham. But we all kind of started in clubs around here, and then they had somebody they thought they could do it, and then they would put you on a show to open. And then eventually, hopefully, then you could headline and see how much you could draw. And it came in increments like that. The way that all happened, there were only, I can name them, there was Meriwether Post, there was Here, there was Blossom, there was Jones Beach, and then probably Ravinia, and then like Alpine Valley. That was big, but there was another, there was one out west of Chicago, Poplar Creek. There weren't any in Florida at that time that I can remember. And all of those, they knew who was good and who was drawing those places. So when you'd work those and kind of come up into it, you were familiar with, most of them looked the same, you know? And to me, it was like getting to this level was an amazing thing. And getting to this level, this many people, and filling it is another one. You go up and go, man, I'm very appreciative, as I said, about that. But that people started coming, and there was no internet then. You know, that was word of mouth that, you know, you're going to have a good time if you come see us outside. And, you know, we always knew the great thing I drew from that. Of course, you'd go inside of some places where they didn't have, but how much learn from audiences here and in those other sheds about how different it is when we played and played what we preach outside. We kind of were authentic in the way we did it because we dressed like we did when we were on the beach. And, you know, and I always said, because most of the people that join the Navy come from the Midwest. And it's an amazing thing because they've never seen the ocean. So I thought we were, in a way, kind of bringing the ocean to the Midwest. The way the Navy, you know, people that left home to go to sea and go see the world, we'd seen the world and we kind of brought it back to them from a beach bum perspective. And I think everybody kind of connected with that. It was no master plan. We just did it and they came, you know. Then they started dressing. That was, we didn't go, hey, go out and get these outfits. You know, they went to the Army Navy store and bought Hawaiian shirts when we came to town. And that just happened that way.
The Pine Knob audience was an early adapter to the Parrot Head culture, though Buffett credits another venue with starting the movement.
The Parrot Head thing started at King's Dominion because they started really dressed. And that's where Timmy Schmidt was in the band at the time, said, they look like, you know, they're not deadheads, they look like parrot heads. He coined that word right on stage at King's Island. And so it just got around because people in that time, we were kind of the minor league version of the Dead. People were vagabond along and they were following shows, you know, and you know that too. A lot of people in a multi-state area around Pine Knob is going to come here if somebody good is, because I think that they also like coming to these venues because you were outside, you got the lawn, you got seats, and whatever level you're going to pay to see a show gets a really good seat at a show. That's the thing I love about these things too.
Pine Knob's fondness for Buffett extended backstage as well, he told us.
The people here have been very nice to me. They gave me a surfboard once, gave me a computer. I get good presents here. Nobody else gives me presents.
Buffett also remembered riding his bike or a golf cart around the Pine Knob parking lot to visit the tailgaters prior to the shows.
One time there was here, because we had a couple guys that had some fake heads up there, and I got in the fake head and went out in the parking lot once here. Then I used to occasionally go out there and put that on just to go look and see. When they're shooting the crowd with video that goes up on the screens, and that's the other thing. Once we got into video again, we could show everybody having that good a time. That had a big effect on all shows. But again, if you look at the setup right there, it's really audience friendly because you're not that far away, even on the lawn, and then, you know, we got stuff out there. But this really sets up well. And it's a great sound in place. And like I said, they haven't messed with it much. And that's rare.
And when the question of how long he would keep doing it came up, Buffett didn't sound like he planned to stop anytime soon.
I don't know. I sing in Cowboy in the Jungle. I went from 80 good years to the 90. I'm watching everybody ahead of me. I see where they are. I'm feeling fine and good and doing it, you know. So why stop? But, you know, and you're looking now at people over 70 and who, I'm looking at people in their 80s that are still actually moving and mobile and doing it. You know, Tony Bennett just retired at, what, 90,
92.
And I met Charles Aznavour in Paris, and he was, I did one show in between the 13 he did at the Olympia. So when I got up that night, I just said to the audience, I just said, pardon, c'est not, c'est Charles de Night, c'est Jimmy Suisse. And so he got a kick out of that, and they did too. I went, no, it's not. If anybody bought a ticket for Charles Aznavour, it's tomorrow night. So, but there and then, and Willie's still going strong. So I'm looking there. And we got a lot of us in this group, like 75 to 80. Who gets to do this long? Start there, and then you think, well, how long are you going to do it? Well, if you live right and you're doing okay at this level, yeah. At some point in time, we may ease it back in terms of energy needed to do this show, but I'm not now. I mean, that'll probably come at some point, but I think we're still a distance from that.
It was a pleasure to have one last opportunity to talk with Jimmy Buffett, who passed away on September 1st at the age of 76. He urged his family to keep the party going after he passed, and that's a message we all certainly can get behind. A posthumous album, Equal Strain on All Parts, comes out on November 3rd. Thanks for listening to this special episode of Hello Pine Knob. Hello Pine Knob is produced by Zach Clark and Brian Fisher and can be found via Odyssey.com and wherever podcasts are found. The final episode of Season 2 will be out on Tuesday, September 19th, when we speak with I Prevail, String Cheese Incident, and some surprises. I'm your host, Gary Graff, and we'll see you on the Hill.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.